Welcome, welcome. I'm Bill Tinker, and you're listening to Dialysis Talk on Blog Talk Radio, where we discuss the healthcare issues of dialysis patients along with other present-day healthcare issues. Dialysis Talk is brought to you by Dialysis Advocates. The information and opinions expressed by our guests are theirs alone and do not reflect the opinion of Dialysis Talk or Dialysis Advocates. We have a great show lined up for you tonight, and with that, let's turn it over to tonight's host.
Hello, everyone. This is Carol, and I'm wishing everyone well. Tonight's show is a compelling story. We have a discussion with a wife of a patient that has been in care for a while. He's now in hospice. And Joy, are you there?
I'm right here. Thank you.
Hi, Joy. We appreciate you for being on the show. And I'd like to just open up the mic to you, and I want you to explain to everybody about your husband and the situation that's occurring in Kansas City with you now.
Okay. My name is Joy. My husband's name is Joe. He's 67, and we've been together almost 30 years now. So it's like for any family, dialysis is a tough situation. He started on dialysis a year ago. Christmas Eve, all of a sudden he couldn't breathe. Up until then, he'd been feeling pretty good. And we rushed him to the emergency room, and they said, "You have kidney failure. You need to be on dialysis." And that's when it all began. After a few days in the hospital and having some dialysis there, he went to a dialysis center, and it was a DaVita center. There are multiple centers here, but that happens to be who he was sent to the first time. And it went fairly well, simply because we had nothing to compare it to. But he had a lot of trouble with it from the beginning. And most of it was because he's an odd duck, and medicines don't seem to react to him the same way they do on most people, and this has been true his whole life. And he's very aware of what's happening in his body, but with the kidneys, he wasn't. And so when he started dialysis, and he of course, the same problem that a lot of people have. He had, some cramping and some blood pressure drops and things until they could get things stabilized to know where was best for him as far as doing dialysis. But he kept running into people who wouldn't listen to him. And that he's an extremely intelligent man, and he's a data person. He likes to be able to make a decision knowing all data, or all that he can. And he wasn't getting any feedback, any data back, to know what was happening and why. And the more questions he'd ask, the more trouble he'd get into. After several months, he had decided this, things have got to, there's got to be a different way to do this. Either it's my nephrologist or it's the center, one of the two. And because nobody will talk to me, they just say, do dialysis or you're going to die. But they wouldn't talk to him about what was happening. And he felt so lousy when he'd leave dialysis. He'd come home and he'd have to lay down. He usually wouldn't eat supper because he couldn't eat and not sleep well. And he'd still not feel very good the next morning. And so by afternoon of the next day, he'd start feeling better. And he'd enjoy the afternoon. But then go to bed and the next day you have to go again. And so he decided we'd have to, let's change nephrologists and change centers. Well, it was kind of, we ended up kind of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. Our first nephrologist was a good man. He really is. And the second place was worse. They would listen even less. And he made the change. He wasn't told he couldn't come back to the first one or anything else. It was just he decided to change to see if it made any difference. And we discovered it did not. And things were getting worse as far as how he felt. And so finally, like I said, he started Christmas Eve. And in August, he said, this is not a quality of life I can tolerate. So I quit dialysis. And so he stopped. And
question.
Then, what?
A question for you. Did they ever find out what caused his renal failure initially?
Not specifically. Their guess is, and it's just like with everybody else, it could be multiple things. He is type 2 diabetic that he's controlled for years just with diet, and so his blood tests come out good. He has really bad arthritis, and so his moving around is not very good. He's had a lot of health issues over the years. And so it was never said, okay, this caused it. But their guess is probably the combination with diabetes and age and not moving around a lot. His diet wasn't, once we got on the renal diet, I mean, even before that, it wasn't, his diet pretty well fit into the renal diet, so that wasn't terrible there. But it just seemed to be, they kept changing things, they kept changing medications, and then we ended up a couple times where I'd try to keep track of the medications and what was used for what. And I'd go back to the nurse and say, hey, you've got him on three different medications for this. Oh, I thought we stopped that one or this one. Or, you know, I said, well, you mean if I hadn't looked them up each one and found out about them, he'd have stayed on them when he didn't need them? You know, people can't, you can't afford this. And we have insurance, but there's co-pays, and even those were high. And so it became a big problem. We, Joe now, he was on hospice starting December 12th. He had decided in right before Thanksgiving he was going to have his catheter out and just go on hospice. He went into the doctor sent him into the hospital to change and to get, or did the test and changed his catheter. And they couldn't find any place to put him back into dialysis. No place would take him. And he said, this is absurd. And so he left the hospital because they weren't going to release him because they couldn't find a place to take him to dialysis.
What reasoning were they giving you all? What was the, why were they not taking him? What were they saying?
Well, they were saying that everybody said they wouldn't take him, and I kept asking why. And they called DaVita places and places that were not DaVita. And they just said that they wouldn't take him. And I finally found out from one of the places that was a not DaVita. I called them and I said, why wouldn't you take him? I mean, you've never heard of him before. You've never seen him. And they said, well, we called the place where you had been last on DaVita, or on dialysis, and they said you were non-compliant and you were threatening to the staff.
Oh, my God.
He got along with people. He was there for every dialysis. He was stayed on the diet to the nth degree. He tried to do everything they told him to do. But he asked too many questions. There was one. There was one instance where he got so frustrated, and he's not a person that raises his voice or yells or screams or anything like that. He's very quiet about how he talks about things, but he's very to the point as well. And he had been trying to get one particular tech. He kept telling him. He said, "I know." My blood pressure is getting ready to crash. He could feel it.
You could feel it. There was
a pattern to this. He could tell when it was going to happen. And he said, there's things you could do to stall this so this doesn't happen this way. And he could tell him about a minute before it happened. And they just said, oh, no, you know, that's not, you don't know what's going to happen. But it kept happening. And he got so frustrated, he made the comment, which was wrong, and he admits it was wrong, especially after 9/11, that do I have to bring a firearm in to protect myself? You're trying to kill me. And afterwards, he had to sign papers, you know, saying, he wasn't threatening anybody. He has no intentions of bringing a gun in or anything else. He was just that frustrated with no communication back and being ignored when he would bring up something that was a problem. And so, he signed the papers, and he was there for several months more and got along with everybody, and they got along with him. And then he stopped dialysis. But when he went back to decide whether about going back on, he had been categorized as non-compliant and threatening to the staff, and nobody wanted to take him. I kept doing research to find out, okay, who can I talk to? What happened? How come we never knew there was this big problem? And as it turned out, there was one doctor who was a medical director at several of the DaVitas. But he had never been Joe's doctor. And he decided he didn't want him back. And that's what he put down. And I said, well, how come it was never discussed with us to try to figure something out, to try to solve the problem? But they won't tell you what does non-compliant mean. Or they won't tell you what does threatening of staff mean. And no one will discuss it. I got really upset. I tend to be a person that likes to solve issues. And so I happened to get in touch with Arlene at the DaVita Advocates. And she suggested that Joe do a video about his experience with just dialysis. You know, not a rant or a rate, you know, anything like that. Just
exactly.
What was it like for you? Which he did, and he did a beautiful job. And we sent it to the higher-ups in DaVita and said, you know, what can be done about this? How can we straighten this out? And so far, there has been some discussion, but not with the particular doctor that has done this. And that's what I'm trying still. Joe is back in the hospital right now because he decided to try to go back on dialysis, but they're not sure he can. He's having that much trouble. So it's a very emotional time right now. We've got kids, we've got family, we've got friends, and Joe is not one to complain. He's not one to want to make waves or be in the limelight. But this is a different issue. This is affecting so many people who can't or won't speak up. And so we're going to go forward with it to see if we can't get this out so that other people who may need some help, just because they're in a situation and don't know what to do about it, can find a place like dialysis advocates, where they can get some help.
Yes, and I'd like to say something right now. I'm praying for your husband. I can understand his frustration. I can understand just, you know, how powerless dialysis can make you. I'm going into my 15th year on dialysis now, and I've had some horrendous things happen to me in the dialysis center. I think safety is my doctor. I have a good doctor. However, you know, the dialysis center and those that work in the dialysis center are the ones that are responsible for your life. And it was through dialysis advocacy that I was able to bring back some power to myself. And what we are asking in dialysis advocacy to those that are listening to the program that are patients or families of patients like Joy, take a video of your loved one. Let them explain what's going on and send copies to us. Send copies to your senators. Send copies to CMS, because we have to no longer be voiceless. Our voices have to be heard. And Joy, what's going on with your husband? At this stage right now, do you see any positive efforts being made by the corporation? That's what I call all of them, the dialysis corporation. Do you see anything positive that they're doing to work toward a resolution with this situation?
They put me in touch with, they did contact me and put me in touch with their head of admissions, corporate-wise. And the first few times we talked, everything was wonderful. And he was going to really, you know, see what he could do about getting it straightened out. And I had real high hopes. Today was a tough day. He made the comment that he has no control over the medical director at the one DaVita that is very close to us by distance. And because that is the one doctor who happens to be in charge of several centers, that he had decided he did not want Joe back. And I lost my temper. Quietly, but I lost my temper. And I said, who's in charge of the corporation? Who's the employee? And who's in charge? Where are the regulations for what can be the grounds for saying you can't come in and giving somebody a death sentence because he can't get in anywhere else? They did find one of the places that would take him in, but it is far enough away. Joe cannot ride in the car for but maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and he gets sick.
Yeah.
And this place is further away than that. We've got one within 5 minutes of our house, but that particular doctor happens to be the medical director and will not allow him back in. But he won't talk to us either to try to resolve the issue. That's what makes me angry. If there was some open communication to try to solve a problem, that's one thing. But when they won't even talk to you, I call it being blackballed, because I don't know what else to call it.
And you're exactly right. It is blackballing. There's no other word for it, you know. And it's also, in my opinion, which it may sound harsh, but it's as if they're playing God, you know. And it really is, because they're making judgments on this man's life. Dialysis is what we do to live. This is not a game of chess. This is real, you know. And instead of making it easier, they're, you know, oh, man, this is sad. This is sad, people.
Yes, it is. And it's not just for Joe. I know this has happened to a lot of other people. And I would like to be able to help be a voice, to be able to get this out there so that other people can be helped. We don't know right now. Joe's in the hospital. I just got home in time for this. And I don't know if dialysis at this point will help him. He may have waited too long. But he knew he couldn't get into a dialysis place.
Exactly.
So he's putting off whether to go back to it or not. And so I feel like they gave him a death sentence. Because even at the hospital now, he's having so much trouble, much more than he's ever had, doing dialysis. Even doing it with, you know, flow rates of 300 is creating big problems.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure what's going to happen. And that's a tough one to stomach.
Yeah.
When you know it could have been avoided. Or at least I feel like it could have been avoided. And a lot of it is communication.
Yeah.
And the thing that we kept hearing was, you can't quit dialysis, you die. We do it our way. Either do it and be quiet, or stop and die. And that's not a good PR.
No.
And there needs to be more regulation of centers.
Exactly. That's the power that they have.
Yeah, it's wrong in my mind. And there needs to be some regulations, some more supervisory from not within the company, but for as most hospitals and things have federal regulations, they have to be a certain way, a certain minimum. And that's not there for DaVita very much, or any other dialysis center. And I feel very badly for most people who have no voice, like you said, but they have to have dialysis.
Yeah. And they have to take the power of their lives back. They have to speak up. That's the thing with dialysis. Dialysis patients have for so many years been invisible, you know, no voice.
Mm-hmm.
We just go in, we do what they tell us to do, and we come out. And then there's the group of us that have voice, and they don't like it because they're used to making all the decisions. They make all the decisions. They make more decisions than our own doctors do because they have the facilities. And our doctors sell us to them.
Mm-hmm.
So the treatments such as what we get through that dialyzer, I'm mad not tonight, so I'm not speaking well, but the medications that we receive is what they say we receive. The pump speeds that we run on is what they say we run on. They've never met us. They don't know our condition. And because they take so much power from our physicians, a lot of times, and not all of them, and when I say this, and I mean it, not all doctors, but there is a majority of the doctors within the dialysis centers that become lazy.
Well, I
they don't come see.
And I think it's become, they have found it as a way that they can gain power and increase their ability to have more patients or, you know, whatever. And it loses the whole idea of medicine is there to help, not just control somebody.
Exactly. Exactly.
And but if you speak up very much, you get in trouble.
Oh,
and that's
yes,
what
you
happened.
Do.
That's what happened to Joe. So we're, like a lot of others, waiting to see what's going to happen.
Well, I'm wishing for the best. What I'm going to do right now is open up. If there's anyone out there that would like to make a comment on this show or have any questions for Joy. The floor is now open for any questions.
This is a new thing for me. I'm not used to speaking out. So if anybody has a question, I'd be delighted to try to answer. I don't know exactly what information to put out there, so I may need some help from you all to know what you want to know.
Exactly. No one seemed to be talking up. Well, I have a question for you, Ms. Joy. How are you holding up?
It depends on the day. Overall, I'm a very strong person. I'm a very strong-willed person. I love Joe with all my heart, and the last thing I want is to lose him. The last thing I want is to see him being uncomfortable or miserable. And so for the day, I stay strong.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of collapse at night, you know. It's hard to watch somebody that you care about being so miserable with life.
Yeah.
Somebody that was so active and so involved in everything. And always had a joke, his biggest thing was to try to make other people smile. And to loosen up a little bit to just relax and smile. Life is too short to spend it being too serious all the time. And so that's what he spent a lot of his time, that's the way he was, or is. He's still doing it at the hospital. And it's really hard to watch. And I just have to try to stay as upbeat and positive as I know how to be. And I try to, he is to the point now where he can't walk anymore. He's so weak. And, I mean, that's 180 degrees away from where he was, even a few weeks ago. He's having trouble breathing now. That's hard to watch. And so it's hard to be a bystander and not be in it when you're that close to the person. But you know you can't be in it too far or you can't help them.
Exactly.
I just try to stay as positive as I can. I try to allow him to do as much as he can, which is becoming less and less. But I'll help in a split second. And I probably help too often. but I would rather it be that way sometimes than not, because I know he'll either fall or drop something, or, you know, that would hurt him.
Right.
And so
right.
A lot of times I will do and say, here you go, you know, and just make it a very matter-of-fact kind of thing. It's real hard to be a caregiver, because I also don't want to be making decisions for him that are not what he wants.
Exactly.
By doing.
Exactly.
And so it's a fine line. And the more involved the dialysis patient is with their own care, the more the doctors and the centers believe it, because at one point they said, you know, would you be quiet, Joy, and let him answer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, sometimes he won't, or he'll only say half of it, because he doesn't want to hurt somebody's feelings. Or it may not have been the tech's fault, except for not listening. But I don't think they're taught to listen. They're taught to set the machine on this, because this is the way we do it for this long, and, you know. And they're not, there is a problem with some of the education of the technicians. Some of them are delightful people, and we have enjoyed meeting a lot of them. Some of them, not so much. But I think in some of them need more training and education before coming out on the floor than
exactly,
they are given.
Exactly, because they don't require a lot for technicians. They don't require a license for them. The training, they can come off the street and be trained by a precept right in the unit and go on the floor when they've never, ever done this before. You know, I have in my unit, we have people that 1 week are working fast food, next week they're in being trained. They have no background in health I'm sorry.
Or people skills. There's
exactly.
So many, and you're dealing with people that are under duress. And sometimes they have to be dealt with a little differently than
exactly.
John Doe on the street to say hi to. There's, I think, needs to be a lot of training involved, and there really isn't. But like I said, some of them are incredibly good, and I give them kudos. But they have trouble sometimes at their centers for being the way they are. But they're willing to talk to the people as a person, not as just somebody that's sitting in that chair that I'm supposed to turn on this machine and do this, you know.
Exactly.
And it makes all the difference in the world. There are happy people, there are angry people, there are sad people, there are confused people. They're people that are hurting.
And they're afraid. They're afraid. We don't know. Because once we come into that center and sit in that chair and those needles are placed in our arms, our lives are no longer ours. For 3 hours, 4 hours, however long you're in that chair, you're under someone else's power. And that takes away from you. I'm speaking personally right now. That takes away from you. So you have to do something to keep, you know, your sanity, you know, and you want to know answers to questions about what's going on. And you should be able to ask these questions without there being repercussions, you know, because it is your life.
That's right. And repercussions that can make a huge difference, like getting blackballed.
Exactly.
Some of the technicians, like I said, are really nice people. And we got to be friends. But I don't want to go in and talk to them about what happened, because I don't want to get them in trouble.
Yeah.
And I have heard that while Joe was on dialysis, you know, they were getting reprimanded sometimes for explaining something too much.
Wow.
You know, and that kind of thing. And so I don't want to get them in trouble because they need a job too, and they're good at what they do.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to go in and get them in trouble by inquiring too much, you know.
I understand.
About what happened. Because they have families too. It's a bad situation that has come about. It's just too much control by a corporation that it does not have control of its employees, I think. If one doctor can blackball somebody and the corporation says, well, but I can't tell you why, or we can't settle it, we can't solve it because we can't discuss it, something's wrong. And there needs to be, it needs to be something that the public is made aware of. If somebody has cancer and there's a problem, it's immediately figured out. There's a million different research things, there's a million teams, there's a lot of publicity, and it all gets settled.
Exactly.
With dialysis, it's like behind closed doors, and nobody knows, and nobody can find out.
Nobody
can. That's right. And so that's why Joe and I had decided that regardless of what happens with it, that's why he did the video. And I think that the corporation knows they've got the video, the CEO's got it, some other important people in other corporations and other medical things have that video. And they don't want it to go public because it's a very logical, common sense, soft-spoken description of what he went through.
And I think he should continue to do videos. I think he should continue to tell his story through videos. I think
right.
There are a lot of us out there that we have to do these videos. When Arlene first talked about the videos, I was like, oh, on the fence with it. But I see now that carries, that's our power. Those videos are our power. It shows us as human beings because they take it all away from us in these centers, you know, and no one knows about us. But if we become visible through these videos, you know, I think that it would make a difference. And we need as many videos as we can get.
We can write the story and put it in any kind of publication or on the internet or whatever, and it's words. When you're looking somebody in the eye and hearing their voice and seeing their face, it's totally different.
Totally
it
different.
Turns
yes,
into a human being instead of just a story. And so I agree, videos are important to make it human, to get it back to its human rights. It's human. It's humanity caring for humanity.
Exactly.
It's not just an individual person. There's thousands and thousands of people going through this. But they're afraid to speak up because of not being able to get back on dialysis.
Because we speak up, that's how they call themselves punishing us. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
With our lives. With our lives.
I agree. And like I said, I hesitated to come on today because things were starting to potentially get turned around by the corporation. And then today I got the call that, well, maybe we can't. And, you know, he's the medical director at that facility, and he decided. And I said, well, why did he decide it? What is it based on? Why wasn't there ever a discussion to try to solve the problem? And you, as a patient or a caretaker, caregiver, you cannot get any information about it, period. They just will not give it to you. And we have not, I tried to call the doctor, because I happen to know his name, and of course he is an extremely busy man, with several hospitals, as well as being the medical director at several dialysis centers.
Wow.
And I called his hospital, and they wouldn't even take a message for me because Joe's not a patient. And he was not in the office to just put me on the phone with him. And I couldn't get a phone number because that's not done when it's just somebody that says, hey, I want Dr. So-and-so's phone number, his private phone number. Where can I reach him? And so I have not been able to reach him at all to say, hey, what is it based on? How can we solve the problem? I mean, he doesn't want to solve the problem. In his mind, saying you can't come back, solved the problem, solved his problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he may be a very good doctor. I don't know. I don't know the man. But I did meet him the last time Joe was in the hospital. We had gone to the emergency room. And he happened to come into the he was assigned to be his nephrologist, you know, just because he was on duty.
That's
when Joe went into the ER. And so I did meet him. And he made the comment to my face, don't even try to go to a dialysis center near here. I about dropped my jaw to the floor. I did bite my tongue. Joe was on dialysis right there in front of him at the hospital. And I just said, I can't believe you just said that to me, you know. And he said, well, I mean it. You know, that's the way it is. And he walked
wow.
out. That's wrong.
Praying God.
Nobody should have that much power.
No.
Without vision. I'm trying real hard not to name names and that kind of thing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how things go, I may name a lot of names. I don't know. But right now, until I'm hoping still that we'll be able to get this remedied. I'll know within a few days, max, you know, or Joe will decide it himself, you know. And, but nobody should be able to have that much power over somebody else's life without any regulation or repercussions or anything else.
You are absolutely right.
I'm just kind of flabbergasted. I thought I lived in America, you know, the greatest country in the world.
And when it comes to medical care, those with the corporations, they're mega corporations. I say this every show. I always end up saying the same thing. These corporations make $1 billion a day.
Right.
$1 billion a day they make off of our lives. They make decisions, choices at $1 billion a day.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible. An incredible thought.
you go into a center, your if you look at your Medicare bill, some of us are fortunate enough to have two insurances. So when you have two insurances, they really hit you. But
yeah.
When you look at a general Medicare bill, I know I'm in Virginia, and I think it's an estimate of $6,500 just for sitting in that chair.
I know.
Just for the services
same
of sitting in that chair.
It's
exactly.
The same in cancer.
Exactly.
And
so,
like a bunch of cattle being herded in.
Exactly.
If your dialysis session runs long because they've had to slow it down and interrupt things at times because of problems, you're a problem because somebody else is waiting.
Exactly.
It takes so long. I said, hey, wait a minute. This is my life you're playing with. You can't tell
exactly.
me to hurry up just because
but
my body isn't reacting to it. Joe happens
they
to have clogged arteries. And so it's a problem with the flows with dialysis because it affects his veins and arteries trying to do the fast flow rates. And he can't do it. It's not that he's being belligerent about it or he's doing it on purpose. That's the way the situation his body is in right now. And if he goes back on dialysis, right now he can't go over 350 or 400 max, which means he'd be there a lot longer, which changes what's your life then. If you spend 3, 4, or 5 days a week with 4 or 5 hours a day and you feel lousy for a day afterwards, you don't have any life left.
There's
That's
no
wrong.
Life left.
That's wrong. It needs to be an individual thing, which I know is difficult with so many people needing dialysis. But you can't be treated like cattle either. You're still a human being with feelings.
And that's the part that they don't get.
It's a bad situation.
Yeah.
Like I said, I truly want to give kudos to the few techs that we have happened to meet who are incredibly wonderful people. And they really try hard to treat you like a person and have a conversation with you when they can, because they've got multiple people to take care of. They're not there to be your entertainment. I understand that,
yeah.
but they're there to be help you as well, not just do the dialysis flow.
And they're there to treat us as if we're humans. You know, we need to be treated as if we are human beings. You know that we have opinions, we have thoughts, we have families. Some of us even have jobs to go to when we get off of that machine, you know. You know, we are people, you know.
Yeah, he'd love to be able to do that, but he's not in a position to do that anymore.
He's not in a position. But he was.
Yeah.
And he still. And the thing is, regardless of what he's doing now, he is a human being. He still has a life. He still has something he wants to do. If it's not anything but sitting in front of his TV with his remote control, it's his life, it's
well,
his choices.
I am sorry I had to chuckle at that. He's not a big TV watcher. He never has been. He's done it a little more, but he's bored to death with it. But the thing that he has always been a person that stayed busy. And the less he could move around because of other problems, the more he had to change what he did. So he became a computer person where he could sit still and move the mouse. That he could do.
All right.
Because his brain was sharp. And he had kept it busy. And he kept learning. And He's an incredible computer person. And so he spends 8 hours a day working on computer issues with things, with people, and talking to people about computer problems and that kind of thing, and fixing computers for other people, because that's something he can do and not have to move around a lot. They can bring their computers to our house. He can tell them step by step so they can fix it right there. He can't
awesome.
Do it himself anymore. He's got the knowledge to help. And he's a good person. So I get really upset when somebody says you're blackballed because you're a threat. I'm sorry if asking questions and wanting to learn data about my life and what's happening to it is a threat. Granted, he may have phrased it wrong that one time, but he said he was sorry. He just was having a lot of trouble getting anybody to listen to even begin to answer a question. And he just got overzealous in his choice of words, even though they were very calm and quiet. They were the wrong choice of words that day.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we do say the wrong things, you know, but our lives should not be jeopardized, especially if somebody that's medically having a problem and just frustrated, you know, frustrated.
Right.
Because you want to know something about you, not about anybody else, but about yourself.
Right. All right. I mean, it's not about some off-the-wall topic. It's about what's happening to me right now, sitting in this dialysis chair. What makes this, what causes this to happen? Is it in my body that's making it happen? Is it a setting on the dialysis machine right now that's making it happen? What is making it happen? If that's wrong, we're in big trouble if you can't even ask a question. And it became very frustrating, too, because depending on which tech you had at the time or on given days, you get different answers to the same question.
Exactly.
And if you ask, sometimes, depending, a nurse or the dietitian or the director at the center, you're a troublemaker. You ask too many questions. We don't have time for that.
Ask too many questions.
Hey, you're dealing with somebody's life, not what they're going to eat for dinner or which movie to go see or which show to go see or whatever. You're dealing with the very life. So, yes, there are going to be questions. People, sometimes they ask, sometimes, like you say, they're afraid to ask because they have observed what happens when you do.
Exactly. It's a fear
and
game.
So,
it's a tactic that they use.
Mm-hmm. People are afraid to speak out. And I don't blame them. But if people don't speak out, it's not going to change. That's why it's so important that whether it's write your story and put it with dialysis advocates, whether it's putting something on Facebook or YouTube or whatever.
YouTube.
Or doing
yeah.
a video and sending it, putting it out. Let people know what's happening to your as your experience with dialysis. If you're having a good one, that's wonderful. Say so. That's important too, because there aren't a whole lot of those. But that's important too, because not every place and every doctor and every tech are bad. That's not true either. There
that's
are some good
true.
Ones out there. There are some that really care, and they need to be known as well. But there are a lot of big problems that need to be remedied. And that's why we decided to do what we're doing with it. and I hope a lot of other people will decide to do the same. And Dialysis Advocates is a group that will help you, just like Carol said, be in control of your own life. Take more control without the repercussions. Dialysis Advocates will stand behind you. They'll work with you, and they'll work with the dialysis centers to make sure to not have a lot of repercussions.
Exactly.
But you've got to speak out for them to stand up for you.
You've got to. It's your life. You know, I think Dialysis Advocacy is one of the best things that I've ever done for myself. Like I said, I've been on dialysis for 15 years. I started out in my 40s dialysis with two young kids. I had two young boys when I started dialysis. And my husband walked out when I became sick, so I had these two kids. And I've been on dialysis, like, forever. So I've seen the best of dialysis. I've had very good doctors for the majority of this time on dialysis. But I've seen some horror stories. And it seems to me lately the centers are just terrible. You know, just terrible, terrible as far as the help that they have in there. And like you said, there are several, you know, you can find a couple of good techs or good nurses sprinkled amongst the bad, but the bad outweighs the good, which is scary for us.
That's right, because you don't have a choice. It's
exactly.
Not like you can say, okay, I want to see so-and-so. You know, they're not... You don't have a choice. You go in and they point you to your chair and you get hooked up and that's it.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that too, because on another personal story, I walked out of dialysis today because of the person that they had assigned to my side of the room. And I've had negative experiences with this person. So... I know I took my life in my hand when I did it, but what I did was I walked out, but I sat out front waiting for my doctor to come so I could explain to him myself why I walked out. You know, it's a difference in just walking out and not saying anything, because they can write anything. But if you stay to voice your story, you know, about why you did it, then they can't do too much with that. Your voice is your power. Just like you said, the questions you ask, your voice is your power. Whether they like it or not, they can't take that from you. They can't. And they will not take it from me. You know, they just simply will not take it from me. I'm going to walk out if you do not have, you know, the person. If I don't feel safe or comfortable with you running me on that machine, you know, I've seen texts that will actually put you on and turn your pump speed up so high that you become sick while you're on that machine.
Joe has had that happen multiple.
Yeah.
And he also found out once. And they came back over and said, did you have a nice nap? And he said, I didn't take a nap. He doesn't take a nap on dialysis.
He bottomed out.
He usually takes his computer to watch a movie so that he can be preoccupied and not think about what's happening and how bad he feels. And they wanted to know if he had a nice nap. And that's when he said, I've had enough. This isn't helping me. He kept having lots of the blood pressure drops that were extreme, you know, not just a little bit. And they give you dialysis, which keeps you alive, but it doesn't help you have any kind of life. It doesn't give you any moral support. It doesn't give you any emotional support. It doesn't give you any way of feeling good about yourself because you're doing something that you understand, but you're afraid to do something about it.
I think the biggest problem in dialysis, one of the major problems with dialysis and the treatment of patients is, 9 times out of 10 when you go on dialysis, it's a shock to your whole body and to your mind because this is not what you thought was going to happen to you anyway. You had no idea. Usually dialysis is a surprise thing that happens.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And there's no education. Absolutely no education. They put a vein together in you or a shunt or whatever in you, and they stick you with 2 15-gauge needles, some people 14-gauge needles, and they place you on a machine you don't know nothing about. You don't know what the heck is happening to you. You know, you don't know what to expect. No education, nothing to make you feel like a person. You become herded in as chattel from the moment that you start dialysis. You know, and that's why I say slavery, because you're treated as chattel. You're not informed as to what's going on in your body. You're not informed about that machine, what that machine can and can't do. They don't care how comfortable it is. And for your first month or so, it's a guessing game, because they really don't know how much fluid is on you versus what your real dry weight is. So you leave out cramping. You leave out hurting. You leave out, you bottom out while on the machine, because it's a guessing game with them.
That's right. And dry weight is ridiculous because it, I mean, you have to, you weigh in when you go in. If you have on any kind of different clothes any time, your weight's going to be different when you stand on that scale.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they'll take that number, and there's some formula, there's some mystical formula they use, which they won't discuss with you.
Yeah, that they can't explain to you.
And Joe does not have, never had a problem with retaining fluid. I mean, he doesn't get swollen ankles or hands or anything, you know, he's not that problem. And they keep taking off all this fluid, and then they end up having to put a whole ton of fluid back in. And his blood pressure is so low by the end of his session that he's got to sit there for half an hour to drinking ice water to get his blood pressure back up so
get
he can leave.
His blood pressure back up. Exactly.
And
it's a guessing game.
If it happens once or twice, I'd understand. But when it's a pattern that happens over and over and over, and you ask why, what's causing it, there are no answers. And I don't know of any other field of medicine, whether it's heart problems, lung problems, cancer, MS, you know, I don't, whatever, all the other kinds of medical professions there are that don't, if things become a pattern, they don't. They find a solution.
You're absolutely right,
that.
Joy. You are absolutely right.
They're not doing
that.
But
they treat us like, no, they treat us like test bunnies. From the time we go in there to the last treatment that we take, they treat us like test bunnies. They really do. They really, really do.
But they're not using the data to formulate a solution. They just mark down the data.
Exactly.
My impression. I'll put it that way.
Exactly.
That's my impression.
And you're right. Because if they were using the solution, if they were using the data, then there would be better treatment by now. I mean, really.
It's been around for a long time.
Exactly. Exactly. And the only thing that keeps being improved, either Fresenius, dialysis, machines. All of this machine can do this, but then they get all these
a complicated and new machines in, but they only come in for a week and train techs who've been trained on other machines how to use the new machines. So again, our life goes in jeopardy because we have techs that were trained for a week that didn't really catch on to the new machines, and again, we're on jeopardy because they don't know what the heck they're doing with the machines that our blood is running through.
We had a problem one day with the tech. We liked the person. They weren't overly educated as far as knowing how to do what they're doing, but they really were trying hard to do it right and to communicate and, you know, all those things. And they apparently, when this person was trained, they had told her, you know, nobody else is supposed to bother the settings on that machine when you're the tech for that machine. And another tech came over and made an adjustment on Joe's machine. And the little gal said, "You can't do that," and went and told the nurse, because she didn't want to be responsible if there was a problem, because she didn't do it.
Exactly.
And she got in trouble because the person that changed it had seniority over her. I mean, in the sense that they'd been there longer, you know. And it wasn't until the other person made changes that Joe started having more problems that day. But the little gal that was doing it, we thought correctly, got in trouble for complaining. I don't understand. There's not a consistency. And it boggles my mind. We talk about, as a society, how wonderful we are, what medical advances we have, how wonderful the medical profession is. And there are a lot of good ones. I don't want to put that down. There are a lot of incredible ones. But it doesn't cover it as well in this realm of it. And I think a lot of it is because it became a big corporate thing and not a people thing. The profits became the main goal rather than the people. And they say they are giving people life. They're giving them dialysis. But they're doing it at the price of their humanity. And
exactly.
That's wrong. I'm kind of speaking out more than I had intended to. I hope I'm not over-speaking.
Oh, I just love you, Joy. I just love you. I just love you. You are my hero tonight, and I want to invite you to come back to the show every Thursday if you want to. Speak out, because I have people on here that's not speaking out. Just speak out and keep us abreast of what's going on with Joe. He has my prayers. He has all the prayers of Dallas's advocacy. He has our support and our love. And tell him thank you for the video. I'm telling you, he is my hero. He is my hero because he's standing up for himself. And I love your family, and God bless you. And thank you so much for being a revolutionary girl on the show. I appreciate you.
I would love to be able to keep you updated. I would like to do that if I... Thank you.
Yes. And call me now and come on. You know we're here every Thursday. 9 o'clock my time is 8 o'clock your time, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget that because we got that
and
synchronized.
I hope that your dialysis continues to go well. I know you're going through some changes right now, but I'll keep my fingers crossed and my prayers and energy headed your way that things will go well.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for everything. thank you for every dialysis patient that I know that doesn't have a voice. Maybe they heard yours, and maybe they'll speak up for your loved one, because we need it. And I thank you so much.
Thank
you. I'm going to end the show.
Helping me speak out.
You are more than welcome, because we love you for it. Is there anyone else out there that would like to say anything before I end the show? Opening up the mics. Okay. Well, God bless everyone. Thank you for listening to our show. Thank you, Joy, for being here, and I'll be listening out for you next week. You take care. God bless everyone.
Good night. I did it. I didn't name any names. We just talked about dialysis in general.